Church Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate once again to have with us Reverend Kelsey Steele, a native of Rock Hill, South Carolina, who currently serves as the pastor of Varick Memorial Amy Zion Church in New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome back.
It's good to be here again.
We're glad to have you here. So let's go back to your story. In your first segment, we talked about your formation for ministry and your journey from South Carolina to being a pastor. We know that you started out pastoring once again, and then God sent you on a vicarious journey through a number of churches. You ended up in Los Angeles, California. So talk about how you got from the South to California.
Okay, now from New Love Chapel, Lake Wiley, which was a part of the South Carolina Conference, South Atlantic, and my bishop at that time was Bishop Monroe, and I had befriended Dr. Dwayne Walker, who was at the Little Rock Amy Zion Church. And so he had invited me to come up to preach for the Seven Last Words. And I mean, it was a phenomenal experience. And it went so well. We became friends then. And a church opened in his area. And he actually went to his father during that time, which was Bishop Walker. And he was in the Piedmont Episcopal area. And he was telling Bishop Walker about me. And then Bishop Walker invited me to come up to Camp Dorothy Walls. They was having a checkup meeting. And Bishop Walker talked to me about accepting a church in Kannapolis, which it was called Bethel AME Zion Church. And I was so excited because my mother was with me, my wife was with me, and we all drove up, and it was such a wonderful experience. And so we accepted the church. And at that checkup meeting, he gave me the appointment. And only to find out, according to our statistics, it was the first church of the Concord District. And so New Love Chapel was the last church of the South Atlantic.
With your seven members.
With my seven members. And so that one incident took me from the last church of a district to the first church of a district in a major conference.
And so what did that look like? How many members? What was a Sunday morning like?
Bethel Sunday morning was about 125 members. And it was what we consider a high church, meaning that we had the processional, we said all of the chants and went through all of the rituals. It was Zion's rituals at its best.
So how are you ready for that?
I was ready for it because my church that I grew up in was somewhat of a high church. It was only until I went over with Dr. Mitchell that I saw what we consider a medium church. They had the rituals, but it was more of an expressive worship with the gospel, the drums, the organ, and it had more youthfulness. So I had the experience to know how to maneuver it.
And so as you continued this journey, and this is really a short amount of time to go from a church of seven, to go from being a youth pastor to a church of seven, to a major church at probably the age of what, 27, 28?
Yes.
And so then you ended up in Los Angeles. So talk about that, because that's right before you got to Varick.
Okay. But my Baptist church, prior to coming back, I had about 150 members.
All right.
And so how did I leave Bethel, Kannapolis? Bishop Walker retired, and then Bishop Battle came, and I served about a year or two under Bishop Battle. And then one of my other mentors, Bishop W. Darren Moore, at that time, he was elected into the Episcopacy. So he became a bishop, and he was assigned to the Western Episcopal area, which has Los Angeles in its area. And so I was the guest speaker at the Connectional Lay Council event, one of the guest speakers, and we was doing the Episcopal address. We each took a part of the Episcopal address, and we were speaking on it. And so that went well. And then after that, he wanted me to talk with him, Bishop Moore. And so I had a conversation with him while I was there. And he offered me First AME Zion Church, Los Angeles. And I prayed about it. I called my wife. And I, at that time, went to Dr. Mitchell, because he was there as well, doing this connection meeting, asked him what he thought about it. And he said, that's a great opportunity. And so I accepted the church, only to find out that it was also the first church of that conference or that Episcopal area, and that Bishop Hines, first female bishop, was elected from there. And so it has great historical value. It seated over 1,000 members. But my first Sunday going there, it's very strange to see how 60 members fit into a church that seats 1,000 members.
Oh, my. So, and this is the journey in the Methodist context. You can have a church which is a first church. So they tell you this is a number one church, the leading church in the area. And as you said, it seats 1,000 people, but there's only 60 people in it. And so to encounter that as your appointment, what did God lead you to do to grow that ministry?
I really had to learn my context. Because going from rural, country, suburban ministry to a large city where you have to compete with First AME down the street with Boyd and Noel Jones and Clarence McClinton, you know, and then church was not a priority for people in Los Angeles because people, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do in Los Angeles. So church was just, you know, for those who just wanted to do it.
And competition isn't just other churches, it's lifestyle.
It's lifestyle, because it's not a churchy place. And so we just had to do some, you know, the normal way I do everywhere, get involved in the community, make sure your face is heard, seen, and your voice is heard. And then from there, people started trickling over. And I received majority of my members from Bishop Omer's church. I think they was going through a season of transition. And I was able to glean some of those people that was kind of leaving there, about 10. And we was able to grow. I was there for about 5 years.
And so you say that part of your ministry was to really understand the context. Explain that a little bit more. How do you exegete a context for ministry?
You really have to really look at the history of that particular area. You have to really connect with those movers and shakers and listen to their stories as to how things came to be. And then from there, you have to see how your ministry fits into that. Because you never should go into a place and just start all over anew. You have to really see how you fit into what's already going on. And that's the first thing that I did there.
And what did you discover?
I discovered that Los Angeles is a great city, but the Zion presence is very weak. And it's kind of hard to compete with the other denominations. The Zion churches there in Los Angeles, we only probably had about 4 in that big city.
That's amazing. And so you served faithfully there, you said, for 6 years, and then the opportunity presented itself for you to come cross country to Connecticut. What seemed compelling for that opportunity?
After that general conference, I was gung-ho on going back to California and serving. I didn't have any intentions to leave. Me and my wife, we was pleased with California, the weather. We have really adapted to the life. I tell you, I was hiking and riding my bike around the beach, and my fitness had really taken off. And so we were really integrated into the life there until I received a call. And the bishop, the new bishop that was assigned to the area, called and was basically saying, Kelsey, what you gonna do? Where you going? And I was like, I'm not going any place. Nobody's offered me anything. And so he said, okay, general conference just over. Somebody gonna call you. And I said, okay. And then I received another call about 2 days later from my present bishop, offering me the pulpit here in Connecticut. And my first response is, that's my friend's church. I was like, I didn't know he was going anyplace. And they started filling me in on the new appointments and different things that they wanted to make. And I'm like, let me pray about it. You know, although it was a major promotion, I really had to consult with my wife and really consult with myself to see, do I really want to move again?
I finally have gotten to some comfort, and
the
door opens up again.
Want to move again? And then another one of my bishops, which is a mentor, Bishop Moore, he called, and he was going into, you know, the future of ministry, looking beyond where you are, and that you can't really stay there. We're itinerant ministers, and blah 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 blah, you know. And so I'm like, okay. And so me and my wife, we talked about it, and so we decided to come to Connecticut and accept that appointment. But we was in love with the people at First AM Design Church. We still hear from them today. It was a big, happy family. And I remember the first Sunday, my last Sunday, I was in tears in the pulpit. Then they had a nice sending forth service where they invited the community, everybody, to send me away.
We're talking to Reverend Kelsey Steele, who is the pastor of Varick Amy Zion Church, and we'll be back after the break.
You might not see it, but you're standing in victory. Listen, I can tell you about pain.
I've been there.
And I can tell you about change.
I've been there.
And I've had the joys of pain.
I've been there.
But there's nothing like a place.
your voice and say now.
Yeah.
feels like I've been down to the river. You washed away all my shame. No longer bound because I'm forgiven, yeah. I've been made free from sin's guilty stain. You gave your life for me that I might be saved. You changed my destiny with the awesome price you paid. Now I can say, old things are passed away, all things are new.
Not the same.
Yes, I've been changed.
Yes, I've been changed.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true.
I found my life in you.
All things are new. Not the same.
Yes, I've been changed.
Yes, I've been changed.
Yeah. Mind's renewed, no longer a sinner. No greater love have I ever known, no. And now I've got power to walk like a winner. Oh, though I may fail, he still calls me his own. Oh, you gave your life for me that I might be saved, yeah. You changed my destiny with the awesome price you paid. Now I can say,
old things are passed away,
all things are new.
All things are new. Not the same.
Yes, I've been changed.
Yes, I've been changed.
Yeah. I'll never
Just the church. Come on, say, say.
He changed me.
He changed me.
So I'll never be the same. He changed me.
He changed me.
So I'll never be the same.
He changed me.
And I'll never be the same. He changed me. He changed me.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pastor Kelsey Steele, who serves as the pastor of Varick Amy Zion Church in New Haven, Connecticut. So you've given us a sense of your background, and you've gone through various aspects of a ministry journey and personal transformation. How do you nurture your soul as you continue on in ministry?
I practice meditation, where I cut everything off, and I just lay on my favorite recliner and just sit there and lay there and try to sense what the Spirit is saying to me and what God is speaking to me in that time. That's how I quiet and center myself. But I try to do, I like riding my bike. I just now took it out the closet because the weather is breaking. And so I try to do things to really take my focus away from ministry for the moment, so that I can refresh and recalibrate.
And now you're in New Haven, Connecticut, so I would imagine you've continued your process of getting familiar with the community because you're very active in the community. What did you discover when you began to engage in the New Haven community?
New Haven is a very fractured community. Of course, you know it's the home of Yale, 1,000 nonprofits. And so you have everybody protesting for something. And so it's busy. It's, I would say the course of my day is 50% community. And so New Haven, I'm just praying for it. It's a small city compared to what I'm used to, but it has so much going on all the time.
And so we started out talking about how you nurture your soul in this segment, and yet you're fully engaged in community. So how do you balance it? How do you decide what to be involved in and what not to be involved in? How do you manage that?
I manage it. I have a really good staff. My executive assistant, Landers, she handles my scheduling, and also have a social justice coordinator. And so she actually gives me advice on what I should be a part of, what press conferences to go to, because she's really knowledgeable of the city and the political arena. And so you really have to pray over where you go, because New Haven is a very political city. And if you seen with somebody that you shouldn't be seen with, you take a picture with somebody that others feel that you shouldn't take a picture with, the political machine starts to rock and reel, and so it's something.
And so as you pray for the city of New Haven, what continues to tug at your heart now for ministry in that city?
That city, I pray that the clergy is able to unite better, because we have such a fractured faith community. We have different groups of clergy, different cliques of clergy, and it's kind of hard to get us together on one page. And so my prayer is for the unity of clergy.
And so when you think about your colleagues in ministry, what do you think is the ministry need? Because the fracturedness comes for a reason. So what is the underlying issue there?
I think the underlying reasoning in all of us clergy, we have an ego. And we have a lot of chiefs, but no Indians. And so in clergy, for one, I feel have a hard time submitting themselves to authority. But in order to be in authority, I feel that you should be under authority. Because I also am the vice president of the Greater New Haven Clergy Association, which is the oldest association for clergy in the city. And we're struggling on life support, trying to keep that alive. And I'm seeking ways to bring clergy together and praying, you know, that the Lord will really show me but situations have occurred in the city, like the violence that many of us have saw with the police shooting of Stephanie. And that seemed to have brought us together, only to receive backlash from the media as to what does clergy have to do with it.
And when you think about the role of clergy, what do you say clergy do have to do with this?
I think that we have to really look at the Black church and see how the Black church was always the center of community life. So everything that went on in the community was filtered through the Black church. What do I have to do with it? What goes on in the streets affects my parishioners. And if I'm the spiritual leader, I have to give them more than Bible. I have to be there on the front line speaking and showing them how to speak and being the voice of the voices.
So describe more the experiences of your people in the pews. What is life like in New Haven? What are the issues for the members of your congregation? Because your pastoral ministry is not just preaching. It's not just being out in the community. It's also that one-on-one pastoral conversation. So what are the needs of your people now?
VARIC is a very diverse ministry. You have everybody from retired school teachers, PhDs, doctors, all the way down to single parents and those who are addicted to substance. And so the major need in New Haven, which is a major need majority of the places, is employment. But before you can get to employment, you have to have job training and preparation. And so one thing that I try to teach and instill in my congregate, go back to school. Because people can take so much away from you, but they can't take away your education. And although they might reject your resume, but don't let them reject it on the standpoint that you don't have the credentials for it. I'm fighting for you, for the doors to open, but when the doors open, have what's necessary to be able to walk through it. And so I'm instilling in my congregation, go back to school. And this season of graduation, I was just very happy to be able to go to so many graduations and see people who have struggled and single parents go back to school and get their degrees. And yes.
And so as you think about your preaching ministry, as you're pouring into your members, what are the subjects that you seem to focus on, or what's the message for your people at this time?
At this time, I just now finished a series on Fit to Finish. And I was basically dealing with social, emotional health, mental health. I was dealing with spiritual health as well as financial health and how it is integrated with spirituality and faith. And so basically teaching and preaching that our spiritual journey should be holistic. You know, God, he don't just want our spirit, but he wants our mind, body, and spirit. And in the midst of that teaching, I focus on fitness and health. And after that particular sermon, we had Yale to come to set up a mini health fair in the fellowship hall where they were checking blood pressure and handing out information. And so we try to really be relevant in our preaching and preach to the whole person.
And we're talking with Pastor Kelsey Steele, who is the pastor of VARIC Amazine Church in New Haven, and we'll be back after the break. Listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches. Welcome back. We're talking with Pastor Kelsey Steele, who is the pastor of Varick Amy Zion Church in New Haven, Connecticut. So your ministry has taken you cross-country, to north, south, west, and you're also experiencing a ministry season where you're going around the world really supporting the work of the Methodist denomination holistically, especially when it comes to evangelism. Yes. Talk about your heart for evangelism around the world and what you've been doing.
I believe evangelism is very important if we want to keep the church vibrant. And I have had the opportunity to work with World Methodist Evangelism on the staff there, and I go once a year to what we consider the Order of the Flames at St. Simon's Island, Georgia, where we take over 100 young pastors from around the world or the North America, from all denominations that are associated with John Wesley and the Methodist movement. And we induct them in which is called the Order of the Flame, which is a secret organization where you are invited by the bishop. And they go through a week long of training as it relates to Methodist doctrine, as it relates to evangelism. And I have been a part of that for the last 4 to 5 years. And during that induction ceremony, I'm actually able to be the one to induct them. I call out the names and hand out the certificates and also do the majority of the teaching in the word track. And so that experience has really taken me across the world. I had opportunity to preach and teach in Costa Rica. I had opportunity to preach in London. I travel, you know, to the Bahamas, Cuba, and all of the different other places participating in world evangelism. And I think that next year our conference is going to be in Japan or somewhere of that nature, China or Japan. And so it really has given me a great opportunity to go around the world. I was kind of saddened that I wasn't able to go to Haiti because of the travel ban. But on two occasions, I was scheduled to go there, but it was called off. And so I really want to venture to Haiti.
And as you're looking at your ministry through this lens of caring about the world for Jesus Christ, how does that shift your ministry at the local level? How do you work locally, but also think globally?
I really would like to see a greater bridge between the local ministry and the global ministry. I think that it's a major divide where I'm on the world setting, but the church is really focusing locally. But I would like to get our church budget and our church programming to include more global oriented things. But as you know, in our structure, in our denomination, we are kind of limited to how to engage in that because AME Zion has its own set of overseas missions and home missions where they fund through the general assessments, whereas World Methodist is totally different. And so it's two different paradigms that I have to try to balance.
And for you, as a preacher in these various contexts, how does the message change when you're sharing the good news of Jesus Christ outside of the American context?
How it changes? Myself, I have had to learn how to be a very discerning and contextual preacher, where the AME Zion Church in my local church, I'm going to give you the black church experience. I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you the introduction, 3 points, hoop, holler, poem, hymn, whatever, however you like it, whatever church. I'm going to give you that black experience, but I have to understand that the black experience is sometimes totally different from the world's experience. And so I have to really stretch myself in my preaching and my delivery. And so it's really have grown me as a preacher, because I'm able to preach in the black experience. I'm able to preach at a seminary. I'm able to preach at United Methodist Church. I'm able to preach at Costa Rica with a translator. But I have to realize that it's really not that much in style, but in substance. And I find in our context, we focus more on style.
And you've had an interesting journey for a ministry. The question would be, what do you believe is the seed God has planted now, where maybe you don't quite know where you're going, but you get a sense that God is taking you in some direction? What is your guess of what God's going to do next in your ministry?
Right now, I'm basically in a season of contemplation, meaning that I'm, you know, analyzing from which He has brought me and allowing it to soak in. Station identification, getting acquainted where I am. And at this point, I really don't know what's next.
We never know what's next.
We never know what's next, but we know that our context in the AME Zion Church has limited places for you to go. But everybody's not desiring to be a bishop. And so if that's not your desire, my question is, what's next? But the Lord has really opened some doors in the political arena, where He's allowed me to kind of venture out into something different and new. And so I really can't answer what's next.
And you know, also in the meantime, God is preparing you. So what are some of the preparatory things God is doing in this season of your ministry?
He's introducing me to some amazing people. And He's really teaching me kind of what goes on in the political aspect, the lobbying aspect. And so, you know, by my connections with the governor, I think I'm soon to be, he's getting ready to give me a government appointment. Soon, in a few weeks, and so that's going to be a whole new avenue to venture in, and so just see where that goes.
And I know that you were pursuing some higher education studies as well. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to go and try to get my PhD or a doctorate, but I want to do it in preaching. I think Frank Thomas has a program that he just launched that I'm very interested in.
And so once again, that's God preparing you for an unknown future.
That's true.
And so as you think about your prayer life now and how you seek the face of God, what seems to be something that's on your heart now that you share with people that you encounter? What's the message that God has placed in your heart in this season?
Never give up. Keep the faith. And don't question them. You know, just go with them.
And that's a powerful message for everyone at this time. So if people want to know more about Varick AME Zion Church, how do they find out more?
You can go to www.varickmemorial.org, or you can look us up on Facebook or any of the social media platforms at Varick Memorial.
And if people want to know more about you, how do they find out more?
You can go to the website. They have a nice little blurb under the pastor's bio.
Thank you so much, Pastor Kelsey Steele. We thank you for your ministry in Connecticut and the world.
But thank you for having me.
30,000 square feet. What would you do with that kind of possibility? Would you strategize your future? Or get lost in the past? Will you fill it with stories? Or use it to empty your mind? Would you explore your spirituality? Or focus on improving your community? Will you use it to work late? Or just work it? Could you create lasting impressions? Or a brief, delicious one? Our vision for the 224? 30,000 square feet of endless possibilities.
Been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.